JC Corcoran Podcast.
Baseball is pastoral, 19th century. Football is technological, 20th century. Baseball is played on a diamond in a park, the baseball park. Football is played on a gridiron in a stadium, War Memorial Stadium. In baseball, you wear a cap. In football, you wear a helmet. Baseball has a seventh inning stretch. Football has a 2-minute warning. Baseball has no time limit. We don't know how long it's going to last. We might have extra innings. Football is rigidly timed, and it will end even if we have to go to sudden death. Football is based on downs. What down is it? Baseball is based on ups. Who's up? Are you up? I'm not up. In football, you get a penalty. In baseball, you make an error. Whoops. In baseball, in the stands, there's something of a picnic feeling. Emotions may run high, but there's not that much unpleasantness. In football, in the stands, you can be sure that at least 27 times during the game, you were capable of taking the life of a fellow human being. Preferably a stranger. And to sum this up, the objects of the game's quite different. The object of the game in football is for the quarterback, otherwise known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, riddling the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use the shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack which punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
June 2nd, 2021. How you doing, kids? It's the podcast. It's free, and we are here. And by the way, I really do appreciate everybody spreading the word, you know, because a lot of people loved the old radio show. Well, the old radio show doesn't exist anymore. So we're here with a half hour of solid stuff, no commercials, absolutely free. You're spreading the word. More and more people are joining us every day, and we do appreciate it. I would like to talk about the Love Boat. And not just the Love Boat, but just the mentality of cruise ships. This MeTV, I'm hooked on this MeTV. I've been watching, Sergeant Carter and Gomer on Gomer Pyle. I even like the Hogan's Heroes coming in there after that. And on Sunday afternoons, they run the Love Boat. Now, back in the 70s and even into the 80s a little bit, but especially 70s, I used to have a theory that the more Love Boat plot lines that you knew and what stars had been on the show, the more you knew about the Love Boat, the bigger loser you were. Because what would you be doing at home at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night? You'd be out normally. It's not like you're out every single Saturday night. Sometimes you just figure, like, I don't feel like going out tonight. I'm going to stay in and watch TV. But the point is this, and don't kid yourself, there's occasionally a point on these podcasts. Yeah, you're sitting there watching the Love Boat. But the thing I love, I have to tell you, I'm obsessed with bad entertainment. This is why I get up on Sunday morning sometimes, and I will watch, like these really bad preachers. You know, it always starts with the hair. Do you ever notice that? I mean, not just in entertainment and stuff like that either. It's just in politics, everything. It starts with the crazy hair. So there's always these preachers with these kids. It's Benny Hinn. I have no idea. You think Trump had a bizarre design to his hair. This Benny Hinn guy, I'm sure NASA is watching the show too, just to figure out if they can learn anything from his hairstyle and how it stays the way it does. We might be able to use that in outer space and weightlessness. So, you know, I watch these shows, I watch these bad entertainment. I'm much more likely to be in my spare time. Now, I have my shows that I love, and I love them because they're good. But when you're sitting there and you're like, there's nothing really on particularly that I want to watch that's a favorite show, that's when I go to the awful stuff. And, you know, the Love Boat is one of those things, because when you watch those Love Boat things now, it's unbelievable that we actually accepted this as entertainment 30, 40 years ago. And I guess I was thinking about this because of the Gavin McLeod thing. We talked about it yesterday. Gavin McLeod died at the beginning of the holiday weekend. And the other thing about the Love Boat is you're sitting there watching it, and when they get a shot of the boat, take a look, good look at it next time. You know, the things that are out there floating around right now are like, you know, 7, 8, 9 stories high. This Love Boat, it looks like it's one story. It looks like one level of rooms, and that's it. And it also helps to know that when you're watching the show, you're thinking to yourself, okay, so of the regular cast, you got Captain Stubing, Meryl Stubing, and I'm embarrassed to say that I know that. And you got Fred Grandy, I guess the first purser, they call it. And of course, he went into politics. Ted Lange, and by the way, that is the correct pronunciation of his name. A lot of people say Lang, it's L-A-N-G-E, and they say Lang, and he goes, no, he pronounces it Lange. That show went off the air, and he just sort of like disappeared. The black guy from the TV show always disappears. You know, look at how popular Miami Vice was back in the mid-1980s. Don Johnson goes on to do movies and TV shows and more movies and more TV shows. He's a big star. Philip Michael Thomas, if he ever did anything after Miami Vice, I never saw it. And then you had cruise director Julie McCoy. And again, I know the full names, and I'm embarrassed to admit that. But and she was a Coke fiend. And on the show, she played this, you know, prissy little cherubic angel of a cruise director. And in her private life, it was just Bolivian marching powder over and over and over again. Part of her nose collapsed, and they finally had to get rid of her, and then they replaced her. And all they did back in the 70s is they took all of the TV stars that were popular at the time on other shows and put them on the Love Boat. And I'm thinking to myself, the beginning of the show, the Love Boat, starring in alphabetical order, and there's Tom Bosley. And I'm thinking about, you know, the dad from Happy Days. And I'm like, who wants to see Tom Bosley making out with some some woman on the Love Boat? I don't get it. And the sappy plot lines, the stories were just, you know, out of a, it was two generations old the way they were doing it. And yet the Love Boat was one of the most popular shows on television. And then, of course, as the show had been on a couple of years and it was starting to lose its luster, now they got to figure out, all right, the ratings are going down. What do? Well, you always introduce new characters. That's what everybody always does. And so then they bring in Captain Stubing's daughter. They got a new cruise director after they fired the other one, and they brought in some blonde chick. I don't remember what her name was. And then when they really got desperate in the final couple of years of the show, they brought out the Love Boat dancing girls, whatever it was. And one of them was Terry Hatcher. She was about 21, 22 at the time. And they just had a thing where it's like, okay, now we don't have anything script-wise to do here or to say, to have the characters do. So over the next 10 minutes, you're just going to have Terry Hatcher and her friends out there dancing away on the stage, doing a disco version of the I Love Lucy theme or something. It was just like, what are they doing out there? But they, you know, they were wearing those little spandex outfits, and, you know, it was the 80s, so a lot of big hair and a lot of heavy makeup. And then finally one day they said, that's it. We can't milk anything more out of this situation. The Love Boat is no more. But, you know, the cruise industry absolutely exploded during that period because everybody wanted to, you know, say, oh, look at the glamour. Look how much fun they're having. Plus, you know, I might find love on the Love Boat. But this is how I felt the first time I went to Vegas. I do not gamble. I don't even fill out NCAA brackets, okay? I decided very, very early on in life that I better not do that because it might be something I might like too much. You know, it was just like, stay away from this. And I saw guys, you know, getting their kneecaps busted and stuff in college. you know, guys were gambling on sports, and I don't know what the deal was, where they were getting the money or, you know, who the bookies were, but they didn't fool around. And I was like, I don't want any part of this. I don't like people following me with the intent to bust my kneecaps open. And so I didn't go to Vegas for the first time until, I think it was like the middle 90s. And I used to go on those film junkets, usually to New York and to Los Angeles. You go out there, you see the brand new movie, the new Batman movie, and the next day you get up and you interview Michael Keaton and Kim Basinger and stuff like that, all right? And so going back to the very first Batman movie in the 1980s, and somebody had this weird idea. I guess it was, there was the downturn in the economy, and they're like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make Vegas a family destination. This was like a concerted effort on the part of the founding fathers there in Vegas and the entertainment and show business community. And they're like, forget all this sleazy stuff here. We're going to make Vegas a family destination for vacations. And so they shot the movie Vegas Vacation with Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo and everybody else. Wayne Newton was in it, of course. You got to have Wayne Newton in it. And they're like, all right, you want to talk to Wayne Newton? You want to talk to everybody in the movie? Beverly D'Angelo, who, by the way, in the interview, kissed me on the hand, incidentally. She liked me, and I liked her. And so they shot this movie, and it was like, oh, look, you bring your family to Las Vegas. Well, the idea failed miserably, and to this day, they don't even like talking about that period where they did that because it was like such an embarrassment. Whoever had the, I'm sure that, the people who had the idea to do this are buried in the desert right now in several pieces. And a couple of years after that, they went back to the idea of, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. All that stuff we told you about, bring your family, forget all that. We didn't mean that. But I get off the plane, and, you know, the limo takes me to the front of the casino. I can't remember the name of the hotel. It was one of the big ones, though. And I go walking in. I'm walking through the casino. And the guys are like dressed in cut-off jeans and tank tops. And I'm like, where's James Bond? Where's all the tuxedos? So I was so blissfully unaware of the fact that, you know, all of that was just imagery from motion pictures back in the 50s and 60s. And I'm standing there and just my mouth was open. I'm sure drool was coming out of the corner of my mouth. I'm standing there watching this going, what the fuck is going on? People are dressed like they just spent 3 days on a bus. And my suitcase is like full of suits and ties and everything. I'm like, oh, man. And that's how it was on the boat, too, the first time I went on a cruise. And I didn't pay for any of the stuff myself. Are you kidding me? You know, these were free trips through the radio station and stuff like that. And so you're like, okay, I'll go. Well, the rooms are ridiculously small. I did know some people who had interior rooms where they didn't have a window. I don't know how they survived a week on this thing, because as small as my room was, you know, at least you still had the balcony. You had light coming in and you could stand there and watch the, there's nothing to see. It's just water, but at least you don't get a claustrophobic feeling out of the whole thing. And these people in these interior rooms, wow, not good. I got into some very, very long conversations with some people who were in the cruise industry, and you find out how poorly the people are treated. First of all, a lot of them are from foreign countries, and they bring in these Russian and Bosnian women and stuff to clean the rooms and to dress up in their little outfits and be, you know, servants and, you know, just people who worked on the boat in some capacity or another, and you find out really how awful they are treated. You find out that there is a jail on the boat, and that more often than not, the people in the jail are not people who have paid to go on the cruise, have a little too much to drink, take a swing at the bartender or something like that, and they have to throw them in jail. No, the jails, more often than not, are filled with people who work on the boat. And they just snap because of the bad working conditions. You know, they're stuck in these tiny little rooms in the belly of the whole thing. You know, you there's no glamour attached to the whole thing. You're working your butt off 7 days a week. I don't think they pay them much money. You're working for tips. And some of these people that you see on the boat, you can tell right off the bat that they're going to stiff the people who are working the boat. And I guess at some point, you know, you just say to yourself, that's it. I'm spinning out here. I'm flipping out, and you end up in you'll end up in Love Boat jail. But it's the concept more than anything else. You know, when I pick out a place to go on vacation, you know, you want a nice quiet beach somewhere, I want to be able to hear the surf. You know, I just want to hear the ocean. I just want to just sit there and enjoy the whole idea of, you know, sitting in the sun on the beach, the nice warm sand, the whole thing. And there's always some asshole at the pool going, you know, okay, welcome everybody. Now the sexy legs contest, and now the hairy back contest, and now the belly flop contest, and now this and that. And they're just screaming. They have, like, you know, 5 billion decibel sound systems down on the beach. You can't even hear yourself think. You know, like to maybe try to read a book on the beach, and you can't even, your eyes are ready to just shatter because of the noise coming from the pool. No matter how far away you get from these assholes with these giant sound systems, you still hear it. But as I said, it's the concept more than anything, because all I could think of is, I remember one night we're on the boat, and I'm wearing a little suit, you know, for dinner. And it's starting to get dark out, and we're pulling away from some Mexican location. And I'm looking out the window, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, right now on the mainland where I can see all these little lights and everything from the restaurant district, you know, the business district and the towns, you know, I'm sitting there looking out the window, and I'm watching the little lights of the city that we're just leaving. And they're, you know, right now in the restaurants and the bars, and there's mariachi bands playing, and people are eating tacos and burritos, and they're drinking tequila and dancing around and having a good old time. And I'm in a suit on a boat eating pork chops. It never made any sense to me. It still does not. And I doubt that I will ever end up on a cruise again. Although, back in the early 80s, I was living in Omaha, Nebraska, and I had a real good friend. He was the local weatherman, as a matter of fact. And he used to take a vacation every year, 2 weeks. He took his 2 weeks that they gave him. Every year, he went on an Alaskan cruise. And he would bring the pictures back. This is, you know, obviously long before Facebook or even the internet for that matter. And he would bring the pictures back, and it just looked amazing. Now, I don't know if it's one of these things after about the third day, you're thinking to yourself, okay, I've already seen 50 glaciers. I don't need to see any more. If you would just say to yourself, it was a good idea, you know, for the beginning and maybe a short cruise, you know, 3-4 days, and then you go somewhere else. I don't know, about 2 weeks. And it's also counterintuitive, the whole thing counterintuitive, because you associate, I think, being on a boat with warm weather, and now you're in a parka. You're trying not to freeze to death, and that really, to me, would seem to cut down on the number of activities that you'd have on the boat. You can't have a pool unless it's indoors and closed somehow, and what fun is that? So again, more questions than answers as we roll on for the 2nd of June, 2021, here on the J.C. Corcoran Podcast. And now this.
Here's another thing. You know, I think people think that a woman couldn't be commander-in-chief of the army because she'd be afraid to kill you if she had to. I don't think it's so. She'd kill you, just not in ways in which you're accustomed to seeing people get killed, that's all. I mean, she wouldn't use a boat or a tank or a plane. That wouldn't be her style. It'd be too obvious. Thinking back, I'd say if a woman really wanted to kill you, she might just get to know you first, then after a while have you do it to yourself. Here's my marriage quiz. Your wife comes in and says, do you think I look fat? Do you say A, yeah, you could lose a few. B, no, honey, you've never looked better. Or C, wait, let me get my protective headgear. Well, some of you might have been encouraged to be honest about your feelings. That's what happened to me, and I said, A, yeah, you could lose a few. And as they say in the nature specials, when the wildebeest leaves the herd, sadly now, there can be but one outcome.
It's Daryl Hammond, formerly of Saturday Night Live. He's so funny, and he's such a nice guy. And then you find out, sort of after his run on Saturday Night Live, that he was battling just bone-crushing degrees of depression. And I remember talking to him about it, so I said, so you get all dressed up. First of all, you make it as a cast member of Saturday Night Live. Just that alone is a tremendous achievement. Now you're out there, every week. You're doing your impressions, you know, Bill Clinton, all the other stuff that you do, Chris Matthews. You go out there, people are roaring, laughing. They're just like, this guy's the best. He's so funny. And at the end of the night, you're depressed. And the next day, you're depressed. And the whole week leading up to the show, you just have this battle within yourself about, you know, these degrees of depression that you're suffering from. I hope that he has gotten his situation figured out. He married this woman, and then they divorced, and then they remarried, and then they divorced again. Bad idea. All right. Oh, did you see the Dick Van Dyke thing over the weekend on CBS Sunday Morning? 95 years old. He still's dancing and singing. He looks like at 95, he could kick the shit out of somebody half his age. It's unbelievable. He's trying to get to 100. He said, George Burns made it. I'm going to do it too. This continuing saga of the woman, Naomi Osaka, quit the French Open. Speaking of depression, Venus Williams shared her secret to handling the media. Here's the quote. I know every single person asking me a question can't play as well as I can and never will. So no matter what you say or what you write, you'll never light a candle to me. End quote. The cast of Friends made $2.5 million each for the HBO Max reunion special, which is a lot more than the $540,000 per episode they made for the entire first season of the show. Speaking of celebrities, not all of them are born into privilege. A lot of them started out with crappy jobs just like you. Hugh Grant cleaned toilets at an IBM in London. Sandra Bullock was a dog groomer. Cyndi Lauper was a kennel cleaner. Willem Dafoe bound Penthouse and Hustler magazines at a factory in the Midwest. Paul Rudd was a DJ at bar mitzvahs. James Brown shined shoes. Kelsey Grammer was a dishwasher at Denny's. Ashton Kutcher swept floors at a General Mills factory. Lucy Lawless was a gold miner in Australia. Taye Diggs sang Day-O in the Little Mermaid attraction at Tokyo Disney. Harrison Ford was a carpenter, still is. David Duchovny was a lifeguard. Warren Beatty caught mice behind DC's National Theater. Javier Bardem was a rugby player, a bouncer, a writer, a construction worker, and a stripper. Danny DeVito was a beautician, and Carol Burnett sold popcorn. I was disappointed last year when we got rid of Marcell Ozuna, who played some left field. He was never, I won't call him a defensive liability, but he wasn't going to win any gold gloves, let's put it that way. But the son of a bitch could hit, and he went down to Atlanta and now accused of threatening to kill his wife during a dispute over an infidelity. That's all they say, but apparently there was some choking involved in the entire thing. If you have seen this movie Cruella with Emma Stone, she doesn't have the cigarette holder because Disney wouldn't allow it. Times have changed, you know. Birthdays today, Awkwafina from Jumanji and a bunch of other stuff. Crazy Rich Asians, 33 today. The weird-looking guy who played Spock in the reboot, Zachary Quinto, 44. Wayne Brady, 49. Let's make a deal. Dana Carvey, our buddy, 66. Dennis Haysbert from 24. And also the Allstate Insurance spokesman, 67. The Beeb, Jerry Mathers, 73. Charlie Watts, the drummer for the Rolling Stones, is 80 today. And Sally Kellerman, Hot Lips from MASH, is 84. She was also Rodney Dangerfield's English professor and Back to School. 97 years ago today, 1924, Congress graciously granted United States citizenship to all Native Americans. That was nice of them. So you see these rednecks yapping away. You come to this country, you learn the language. Like, native language? Oh, yeah. Apache? You mean you can speak that? 88 years ago today, 1933, the president of these here United States at the time was Franklin D. Roosevelt. He had a swimming pool built in the White House. Eventually, Nixon had the pool filled in and turned it into the modern press briefing room where you see stuff going on today. I think Nixon had turned it into a bowling alley at some point. 86 years ago today, 1935, Babe Ruth retired from baseball. And 32 years ago today, I remember doing this story because we sure had a lot of fun with it. It was 1989, and after announcing his engagement 2 months earlier, Bill Wyman of the Rolling Stones, who was 52 at the time, married 18-year-old Mandy Smith. He'd been seeing her since she was 13. Wyman divorced the girl when she grew too old for him. 2 years later, not long after, Wyman's son started nailing Mandy's mom. You imagine that? Family tree? Looks like a stick. And we're going to close the podcast with something I had intended to play going into the holiday weekend, and then I just got busy and didn't have time for it, but I wanted to make sure I played this for you. So this goes back, that was sometime in the 90s, and the sports monster, Steve Schlanger, was sent out to Gateway International Raceway with a wireless microphone to interview Bruce Flanders, the track announcer. This is the guy when you go to the races, and this guy's, you want to talk about sound systems, all right? So we send Schlanger, our studios at that time were on Market Street, 20th and Market, and we sent Schlanger over into Illinois with the wireless microphone and said, go ahead, put this guy on the air. Schlanger thought he had us that day. Turns out we had him.
Off we go to the Gateway International Raceway, where Steve Schlanger is in the broadcast booth, in the announce booth. What's the deal?
That's right. We're at the perch high above the Gateway International Raceway, and I must say, JC, that this interview between myself and also Bruce Flanders, the track announcer, is going out to everyone within listening distance of the Gateway International Raceway. This includes people on the infield, people in the grandstands, anybody in the vicinity of Madison, Illinois.
Now, they can hear you, but they can't hear us. Is that correct?
Yes, and that's the way we designed it. They cannot hear you. For once, they cannot hear you. Now, fans of J.C. Corcoran, you cannot hear him.
Now, Bruce was on the air with us last year when he was in here in town, right?
Yes, I was.
Yep. Oh, yes, you were. Yeah. So let's just talk about where you've been. What's been on the road for the last couple of weeks for you guys?
Oh, wow. I've been motocrossing the last couple of weeks and watching guys like Jeremy McGrath go fast on motocross. I understand, JC, you're quite a motocross fan. They tell me you are a racing fool.
Oh, yeah.
15 years.
I still got
He's a gearhead.
I got mud in my teeth as we speak.
You got the fool part right.
Hey, congratulations on the 15 years, dude.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. It's 14, but who's counting?
Although somebody really should have put him into the wall around turn two or 3 or 4 years ago, I think.
I think we scraped him off of the wall last year here, didn't you?
Bruce is real busy this morning, by the way, as you can tell by the fact that we are the ones on the PA, and he's not announcing racing. He's been actually charting the progress of the flatbed trucks going around the oval this morning, trying to dry the track in time for racing. Bruce, a compelling profession you have here.
This is certainly a fun morning, isn't it? I mean, this is when the guy reaches back and goes, and there they go, into turn number two. And you always worry whether or not maybe Dick Trickle is driving one of those tow trucks.
Now, describe the type of day you have. I mean, you arrive early and stay pretty late, don't you?
Yeah, we're here from about 6:30 in the morning until the last lost little kid is picked back up by his parents. It gets to be long some days.
Or at least a snatch by somebody who gets him out of the racetrack so they can close up for the night, right?
We sell the last kid if his parents don't.
Hey, Bruce, do you have a general thing that you begin your racing afternoons with? I mean, when you finally actually go on and you start the whole thing off, do you have a spiel that you usually go through?
I don't think there's anything standard. No, it varies with the type of racing that you're at. In this particular racing, the CART FedEx Championship sells itself, and the announcer's just kind of along for the ride.
But, I mean, 60,000 people are there. They're in their seats. They're ready for the thing to go, and you don't have anything to go, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I make it into the clothing optional period. If anybody gets naked, I go there. You know, I mean, I'm like you. I'm looking for the party.
And it's not just a cold, static read that you do. I mean, you inject personality, don't you, from time to time?
We do as much as we can, and then if you've done too much of it, you find out they don't invite you back next year.
What type of response do you get from people in the pits and on the infield that actually follow the series and work with the racers?
Absolute both ends of it. Some of them want to kill me, flame me on the World Wide Web, and others want to invite me home and introduce me to their daughter.
Then you are doing your job, because if you aren't pissing, I'll tell you, 14 years I've been here, if you aren't pissing at least some of the people off some of the time, you're not doing a good job.
That's right. You're not going to keep all of the people happy all of the time, so stuff it.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. There you go.
What's the worst reaction you've ever gotten from anybody? And what did you say to get it?
Oh, I think it had something to do with religion at one time, and the man misinterpreted it, and I know he's on his way to heaven, and I better not touch that one any further.
And a final thought before we let you go and wrap things up here from the booth at Gateway International Raceway on a day like this. I'm sure you have them all over the country where it's raining. No activity on the track except the trucks driving around. It's sort of like a baseball announcer filling time during a rain delay. What are the stories you have to come up with?
I turn the mic off and make fewer mistakes on rainy days like this, because honestly, with an El Nino type of year, it has actually rained on every one of the kart races. Even Rio this year, they got rain. And the announcer can make a mistake, as JC will know. There's sometimes that you wish you'd left the button off.
All right, now, here's the deal, Bruce. We have, you know, your voice booming out with 5 million watts of power and everybody getting ready for the big weekend. I want you to just, over the loudspeaker system right now with the engines racing, I want you to say, hey, Sports Monster, bite me!
Don't do it.
I'm going for it. You ready? Love to keep, make sure everything's, hey, Sports Monster! Bite me.
Hey, Bruce, thanks very much. I come up here, try to promote you a little bit, and what do? You rag on me.
I'm going to hurt you if you stay much longer.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Oh, God. Oh, I haven't heard that in a while. That was fun. And with that, we say farewell for another day, the 2nd of June, 2021. We're here every morning. We publish at 7, download it, listen whenever you want. And as we said, very, very appreciative of the fact that you're spreading the word, letting people know that we are here every day at jconline.com. Have a great day. Back in the morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.